Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Now it's time for Inside the Clubhouse, a show dedicated to the Chicago baseball fan, featuring the best Chicago baseball conversation, as well as the big MLB topics, along with the biggest names, greatest guests, and listener interaction with Chicago baseball expert Bruce Levine and Ryan McGuffey on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
Middle of summer, I can't remember when it was, but I was actually on my lawnmower cutting grass.
That seems fitting.
And I look down, it's beeping in my butt, in my earphones. I look down, Jerry, and I'm like, do I really not take this call right now? I didn't, because by the time I get everything turned off, I got my phone out, turned everything off. So I finished cutting grass a little bit and then went in and called him a little bit later. So,
good morning, Chicago. Bruce Levine, Ryan McGuffey back in the studio this morning. Here on Inside the Clubhouse on 670 The Score, that voice you heard was White Sox legendary pitcher Mark Burley, who last night Bruce and I were both there at Sox Fest Live, the new format at the Remova Theater, and we found out that the White Sox will be unveiling a statue of the legendary pitcher on July 11th at the ballpark. And, you know, we're going to get into Mark Burley later in the show. But always good to see him. He was as jovial as always, even though he likes to say that he hates the attention, as we know. But once he gets the attention, he's always good with us. He was great on the White Sox panel. We'll talk about Sox Fest later in the show. We have Cubs pitching prospect Cade Horton is going to join us. White Sox pitcher Jonathan Cannon will join us later in the show as well. But Bruce, a lot to get to. There's a lot of Cubs news we want to hit on here. But good to see you. Good to have you with us. Obviously, as always, here on Inside the Clubhouse, we were both there last night, and Mark Burley is probably as deserving a former player in this town to get a statue as anyone.
You know, I rarely see you this excited, okay? Because you've gotten so much into our beginning open here. But, you know, I know, look. Your White Sox fandom goes back to the Chicago White Sox, even though you've covered the Cubs for the last 30 years as well in your duties. So it's obvious how excited you were and a lot of us were to see Mark Burley.
I'm going to interrupt you, because Mark Burley comes to the media. First person he sees is Bruce Levine, immediately puts his arm around him, and he, at least for a good 2 minutes.
And then he says, oh, what am I doing here? Yeah. But it was great seeing Mark. I mean, look, he's on the Mount Rushmore of every media person in Chicago's, Mount Rushmore for being one of the greatest people to cover, mm-hmm. one of the biggest stars who never took himself that seriously and always had time for everybody else. So when it comes to seeing him again, it's easy to remember all the good days, the World Championship, the no-hitter, the perfect game. I'll say it again, a no-hitter and perfect game for a guy that didn't throw harder than 88, 89 miles an hour. Just an incredible story and an incredible guy. So we'll get back to Mark and Sox Fest in our section number two of our show here around 9:30. But we're going to start off with the Cubs, because they are extremely active right now. And according to some sources out there and reports, the deal with the Houston Astros is agreed upon between the Cubs and the Astros to send setup man closer Ryan Pressly to the Chicago Cubs for prospects, or other considerations, if they can get Ryan Pressly to waive his no trade contract. He'll make $14 million in 2025. He'll become a free agent in 2025 after the season in November. Firmly entrenched and living in Texas near Houston. Situations, considerations that the agent and Cubs in Houston are trying to work out to get this deal done right now.
Yeah, we've been talking about the Cubs and the back end of the bullpen for months, you and I. And this deal, and then, you know, a lot of people, if you don't know Ryan Pressly, he was a former closer of the Houston Astros. He had 26 saves in 21, 33 in 22, 31 in 23. The reason he got quote unquote bumped is because they signed Josh Hader to a monster deal last year. And he was their setup guy. He did have a little bit of a rougher year, the highest whip in the last 6-7 years that he's had. But what he would do to the back end of the bullpen, we've heard Jed discuss this. We want your thoughts at 312-644-6767. They need lockdown guys in the eighth and ninth, Bruce. Roles are TBD. I mean, there's other names from Stanek to Robertson that the Cubs are zeroing in on. And maybe it's multiple guys because they need to get to a situation where if they get good starts, if Justin Steele goes 6 or 7, they can lock it down in the 8th or 9th and not have 26 blown saves like they did in 2024.
So the thinking is that the starting pitching depth is good, but that they're not counting on the same results that occurred last year when Wrigley Field played as big as Yosemite all year long. And although the offense was impacted, they feel their pitching got a lot of extra help because the ballpark played big. They're not counting on that again. So therefore, what you're saying is correct. The starting pitching will be good, not great, and that they need the depth in the bullpen to be a true contender come September going into October.
Yeah, you reported, and I want to get into this a little bit, you reported that the issues that are holding this deal up could be resolvable. Not saying that it's a guarantee, but these are things that could be worked out between both sides. So it seems closer than not. I think John Heyman jumped on, kind of piggybacked off your reporting by saying he didn't want to go east, he didn't want to go west. Well, there's really only one team then. It's either, to me, there's two teams. It's either the Cubs or he stays in Houston.
Well, money talks and BS walks, and that's just the way it is. And in this situation, it's about tax. So he's making $14 million. From what I heard, in Texas there is no state tax. So you are paid $14 million by the Cubs in Illinois. You have to pay state tax on the $14 million. Ryan figured out that it would be
roughly
about $1 million. So that's a separator. Also, the fact that we're hearing that he wants, to have some money to just move his family, okay? It's not uncommon. It's been part of other deals before. And then again, is he or is he not a free agent again? Does he retain his right to no trade if he waives the no trade now, okay? That one I didn't get answered to yet. But can he be flipped again in July, and will he get more money if he has to relocate himself and his family in July or August if he gets flipped? So these are some of the, you know, the minutia that is going on trying to get Pressly to waive his deal. Now, the positives for the Cubs in this situation is that he's going into his free agent year, right, Ryan?
Yep.
And he's not a closer. So with the Cubs, he gets 30 to 35 saves. He goes out in the free agent market next year, and he has more power to get the kind of contract he wants going forward than being a setup man for Hader in Houston.
Yeah, I would think that that's a pretty attractive part of this deal for him, is that he gets to go back to the spot that's most lucrative. And so, I mean, he is 36 years old, so at this point, in terms of getting, you know, future contracts, you're probably – He's probably going to get a two-year deal if he has a big year. It's good. That's a high AAV. Let's talk about Ryan Stanek and David Robertson. Where do they fall into this mix? Are they backup plans? Are they part of the plan? And then I want to get to Alex Bregman, the bigger piece of the entire equation.
By the way, 312-644-6767. You want to jump into the mix, get your thoughts on this. Sox Fest conversation, White Sox, the bottom of the hour. So Stanek had an off year, but from a strikeout perspective, it was one of his best years. As far as ERA goes, which sometimes you can throw out for a relief pitcher, he's a power arm. He is, you know, somebody that pitched for two teams last year. He's a free agent now. So they've been talking to him. David Robertson, who Chicago fans know quite well because he pitched for the White Sox for a long time and he pitched for the Cubs for a half a year. He is also someone that they've talked to. David Robertson's 39 years old. You go, whoa,
yeah.
Why? And then look at his numbers as a 38-year-old last year. 4-1 strikeout-to-walk ratio, 99 strikeouts and, like, I think 67 innings. So the strikeouts were unbelievable. As we know, David Robertson's a four-pitch pitcher, a former starting pitcher turned into one of the better relief pitchers in history that nobody talks about. 16-year career.
It's because it's about Mariano Rivera. He was the premier setup guy back in New York for the best closer of all time.
So, and he was a closer for the White Sox for a long time, then with the Cubs shortly in 22, and then traded at the trading deadline when they were rebuilding. I tried to call his agent yesterday, but David didn't pick up the phone.
Oh, he has you blocked.
Yeah. So David Robertson's one of those few players that represents himself.
Yep.
And has done that for a long time. And he's a really engaging guy, as well as at 39, still a very impactful pitcher. So, again, these are some of the things that they're doing. You know, depending on how much they have to pay of the contract for Presley, we'll see if they can add another piece. And then we jump to another former Houston player in Bregman.
Yeah, he's the sexy name everyone wants to talk about because he's the 30 home run hitting third baseman. And everyone's like, why can't we just get him? So, Bruce, where are we on Alex Bregman?
So, it appears that Detroit and Boston were the main suitors. We don't know how long the contracts were being offered, but to this point, right now, there's no deal done with them. The consensus when I talked to a friend of his was that Alex really wanted to come to New York or Chicago. New York, the Yankees were in early, and then they were out. Okay, the Cubs don't really have the inclination to go 5 years for Alex Bregman, okay, at this time. They love Alex Bregman. They would love to have him in a 1 to 3 year type situation. Bregman is considered a $25 million player at this point. He turned down 5 years at 6 years, $156 million with Houston. Early on in late November, early December. According to his friend, he regretted doing that. Mm-hmm. And there's still a chance and talk that he can go back to Houston now. Okay. So if Houston moves Presley's money, they get more money back to maybe put toward Bregman. How does Bregman fit in with Paredes and with Altuve moving to new positions in Houston? It's awkward looking, awkward sounding. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I don't see, you know, Paredes can't really move if you were to move him, meaning he laterally, he's a big dude. So where are you going to move? I saw the report that they may move Altuve to left. So you're going to take a Hall of Fame type second baseman, move him to left field. That's awkward as it is. It's a shorter porch, so they might be thinking, well, you don't need to be as good defensively. But that ball bounces off that left.
You have 81 road games, too.
You have 81 road games, and the Crawford boxes are abnormal. That left center field area is abnormal. I would personally not want to be putting my Hall of Fame second baseman in left field and then Paredes having him switch positions when you need to be strong up the middle. That is making you weaker up the middle. I can see a reunion with Houston as we get later and closer to spring training here. But if the Cubs were to entertain Alex Bregman, what do you think that looks like? Is it a 2-year deal, a 3-year deal? Like, how does that happen?
It's got to be creative. It's got to be a 1-3, okay, with opt-outs for the player, okay, and situations for the team that they have options in the second and third.
So like a
year.
Cody Bellinger type deal.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. And again, he won't get a no trade. So, you know, that gives them the flexibility. I mean, nobody thought when Bellinger signed his contract last year for 3 years with 2 option years that he would ever be traded by the Cubs. Yet.
Here we are.
I mean, the Cubs didn't want – they didn't think he was worth that money, and they got an upgrade in getting one of the top, you know, outfielders, you know, arguably the top one or two right fielders in the game, you know. So with that in mind, as you said, that might be the Bregman situation signing now. Obviously, they have the same agent, right?
Yeah.
Bellinger and Bregman, Scott Boras.
Yeah, and we've seen as things get closer to spring training. Look, we're less than 2 weeks away from guys going down to Arizona. I mean, as soon as we hit the end of next week, when we're doing this show next weekend, we're going to have guys already down there reporting. You know how it goes now. It's not the old days where guys are trickling in February 17th.
Cubs open 2 weeks, their camp 2 weeks from tomorrow.
2 weeks from tomorrow. So next week when we're doing this show, there's going to be guys already down there early reporting because that's just how they are. They're creatures of habits. They want to get in. And the thing with Bregman is, and we've seen this with players, Bruce, guys don't like not knowing. A lot of double negatives in there. They don't like not knowing where they're going to be. They want to know, especially baseball players. They're creatures of habit. They have routines. And if they don't have a routine come February 1st, the panic starts to set in. And maybe the Cubs kind of fall into this. You mentioned creatively, going back to the bullpen, do you think Presley, if this situation's done by the end of this weekend? Because the Cubs also need to start figuring out. Look, I'm looking at the free agent list here. There's still a boatload of guys available.
Yeah.
But with what the
There's
Cubs
probably
need.
Probably 75, 80 guys
yeah,
still available.
But with what the Cubs need specifically, they need the back end of the bullpen solidified.
No question.
And so that's a bigger priority right now than Alex Bregman.
Right. Exactly. And again, you know, part of their plans, you know, I mean, it revolves around payroll, being stealth about making deals and being creative. I think last year, if I'm not mistaken, Bellinger didn't sign with the Cubs until after camp had started, about a week or 10 days.
Yeah, that's correct.
And so that doesn't mean that Bregman won't be the same thing going into this year again. Teams love Bregman. Okay, all the teams that have been talked, Detroit, Boston, Houston, the Cubs, love Bregman. But at age 31, with not a great year last year, his OPS was down, his walks were way down. It appeared he was trying to slug more and be less patient because he was going into an offseason as a free agent. But all the reports on him and the things that I know from having talked to him over the years, he's a baseball grunt guy. He comes in early. He stays late. A great teammate, a great representative for your team, a guy that runs the bases extremely well, is a very good third baseman. So he checks an awful lot of boxes. The only box he doesn't check is nobody wants to give him right now a 5 or 6 year deal. At 31, you know, that window is going to shut. So even if he gets a opt out next year at 32, and he has a great year, it doesn't mean he's going to get a long term contract from somebody. You know, that's the age starts to work against you when you're trying to get 5 or 6 years and your numbers are kind of wonky.
Had a big second half. I mean, he had an 833 OPS. He was definitely trying to slug. We know the Astros were kind of a mess out of the gate in April and May. It looked like they were going to break it up. And then, of course, what do? They put it all together, and then they get to the postseason. Plenty to get to here. We have The lines are starting to fill up here. 312-644-6767. We're going to talk more Cubs with Cubs prospect Cade Horton at the top of the hour. But on the other side of the break, we're going to talk about Sox Fest. I know we had some callers on the line who were at Sox Fest. We have Mark Burley getting his statue unveiled on July 11th. That news came last night at the Romova Theater. Bruce and I were there. We're going to talk to White Sox pitcher Jonathan Cannon in the 10 o'clock hour. So plenty to get to. Let's discuss the White Sox and Sox Fest, the new format. On the other side of the break on Inside the Clubhouse, he's Bruce Levine. I'm Ryan McGuffey.
Alexei!
We're back with more Inside the Clubhouse.
Ryan McGuffey, Bruce Levine here on Inside the Clubhouse on 670 The Score, July 23rd, 2009. Mark Burley tosses a perfect game, his second no-hitter. This one a perfect game. Bruce, I'm sure you were there. I was there. And now we've learned at Sox Fest Live last night that Mark Burley will have a statue unveiled very close to the anniversary of that date, July 11th. You know, going back to the beginning of the show, he discussed getting a call from Jerry last season sometime during the summer. He's mowing his lawn. He's conflicted as to whether or not to pick up the phone because of the lawnmower, and he ends up calling him back. It's a perfect Mark Burley story. The dude just is cutting his own grass in Missouri, and, you know, that's who he is. He's what did he tell us last time or last night multiple times? I'm just Mark where I live. Here I come, and it's like everyone wants to talk to me and meet me, but he understands why. He understands why he's been deserving of that, the retired number, the 2005 World Series championship.
Now, do you really think he understands, or he's just amazed, still amazed both, that all this has happened to him?
I think both. I think he's pinching himself as to why, but as he's gotten, and I asked him this last night, as you know, with the way the jersey retirement happened, now with the statue, the Hall of Fame ballot, and we're going to get to the Hall of Fame conversation in the next segment, but specifically to Burley, I think being on the ballot for 6 years now, this will be the sixth year next year because he had 11.4% of the vote this year. I think that he's starting to realize, okay, outside of Chicago, people are taking notice too. Now, is that deserving of a statue and number retirement? That's an argument, but hey, he's not on the Mount Rushmore of good dudes. He's on the Mount Rushmore of good dudes to cover that had an iconic career in this town, Bruce.
Yeah, so the iconic career in the town and the Hall of Fame we'll talk about later. The reality is that, you know, being a good guy and a good person and a great teammate, it matters now, okay? So when people reflect on their career, right, and you saw, you know, some of the opposite with Sammy Sosa last weekend at the Cub convention,
yep,
where there were mixed results about him as a teammate, about him as a player, the believability. With Burley, he resonated with every man, every kid, every person that played baseball that thought, you know, maybe here at 14 or 15, I'm going to be good enough to be a pro. And then the Mark Burley stories happened to guys like us.
Yeah.
You know, what was he picked in the
38th
round? 38th round,
yep.
Right?
Yeah.
Didn't break 90, the fastball, but, you know, worked hard, threw strikes, great at his position, worked his butt off. I mean,
never shook the catcher
right
off.
So
just pitched.
So it's a better story because he's a more relatable star player that came out of the ashes, you know, rose up and became this iconic pitcher. Now with his number retired, a statue, a part of a iconic world championship that hadn't happened in 88 years on the South Side. So perfect storm, perfect guy for it, right?
Yep.
Not the greatest pitcher in the world, but one of the greatest competitors and one of the more relatable people.
Probably the most consistent pitcher that we'll see in this town maybe ever because of the way pitchers now are not – 200 innings is no longer a thing. And the fact that he did it for 14 straight seasons and came a third innings short of 15 straight is phenomenal. We'll get to that in a minute. Let's talk about Sox Fest. So we were there last night. He was on a panel reflecting the 20th anniversary of the 2005 White Sox. It was funny. Freddie Garcia was on the panel. Jose Contreras was on the panel. Harold Baines, who a lot of people forget was the bench coach on that 2005 team, was on the panel. It was moderated by Chuck Garfine at CHSN. Freddie was funny. Yeah, Freddie was funny, and it started to feel, Bruce, you know, they played a tribute video to the team, and the buzz in the room lifted. It was, I think we were both kind of looking around going, I don't know about this format at Sox Fest. I don't know. It's a smaller venue. Yeah. And then that panel kind of kicked everything off. There was a band with Len Casper that started the whole thing. It was like a cocktail hour. That panel, I feel like the energy in the room changed right there, and we both were talking. Like, when we left the room, after we talked to Mark Burley, and I stuck around for about 30 or 40 more minutes, it felt like, you know what? Maybe this was right. Maybe this worked.
It was right, considering the downsizing that the White Sox have done as far as star players, developing young players, starting over, not only as a team, but as an organization, you know, a complete flush of the people that were there before, other than Getz, who took over as GM. And the idea that it's a new day, one that, you know, created 121 losses last year, 101 the year before. Predictability for this year is unknown, okay? Is it 100 to 115 losses? You know, can they be worse than last year?
They could. I think it's going to be really hard to be, right. When you think about that, you look at the roster they're trotting out there, you can make a case that they could be a 121 loss team. This is where you're hoping your manager that you hired is smarter and guys can step up when there's a 14-game losing streak. Someone can stop the bleeding. Right.
Yeah, no manager can stop a losing streak for a team that doesn't have enough talent.
Agreed. Okay. You know, but a manager can change the way that they're playing the game. Yeah. Now, their bullpen's going to be a big part of that. There's a lot of unknown. You know, we talked to a lot of the prospects in the room last night, and, you know, the buzz I got, I talked to Braden Montgomery, Colson Montgomery, Kyle Teal, Chase Meidroth, Hagen Smith, and the one thing collectively, and here's what Sox fans are probably not going to want to hear, because it's going to be like, oh my God, I heard this 7 years ago. Collectively, they're not going to want to hear guys are going to take, they have a chip on their shoulder and they're excited to come up together and change the narrative. I like the fact, Colson Montgomery said, we know what's been said about us. We know what the prospect rankings are. We know the dark cloud hovering over us. None of us have anything to do with it, but it's kind of guilty by association, and we're taking it. If you've been to Sox Fest, if you're going to Sox Fest tonight, call us up, 312-644-6767.
I really I had my doubts about Romova, the converted theater of the Daly family and Bridgeport. For many years, it was just, you know, one of the really great theaters where you went and saw movies for 80 years, you know, and it went dark, and then it was bought and renovated, and they did a tremendous job of renovating this theater. It's a venue now. It's a nice venue, and initially when I walked into the place and there weren't any fans in there, I went, problem here. By the time the seminar started, it was full. It was probably, you know, somewhere between 400 and 500 people in the venue, and it was rocking by the time we left. I mean, it was just, you know, Sox fans were getting into it. I thought it was the right venue at the right time for the White Sox. You know, Sheena Quinn and the media relations and PR people, the White Sox marketing people, Brooks Boer, did a really good job of identifying a change that was needed for a venue. And I think it really worked well. It's going to continue on today as well.
Yeah, I'm told that the attendance tonight is actually supposed to be double of what it was last night. So the ticket sales for tonight were bigger. Look, there's people like the 708 that say, great for Mark Burley, but I'm tired of hearing about 2005. It's going to be years before they matter. And that's assuming they get it right, which they just flopped on. Sox just play Major League Baseball. That's just do that, and it's a big improvement. I get that. It's kind of like people talking about the 85 Bears. At some point, please tell me that there's a new team to talk about. I get that. I totally get that. And people don't want patience. And some people are like, you know, I have a buddy who's like, I've gone to Sox Fest every year. I'm not going to this new place. Well, I said, you know, be open-minded. And some people don't want to be open-minded. I think the hotel format works. It works for Cubs Convention. It's worked for Sox Fest in the past. It's the first time they had it in 5 years. And we talked about this a month ago. I said, hey, for all the people crapping on it, let's at least give it a chance and review it after the fact. And at least, like, again, for this year, I think it worked. Now, going forward, you can make an argument that I don't know if that venue's right, but time and place, Bruce. Time and place matter. Again, 312-644-6767. But I think for this particular year, they got it right because there's not a big laundry list of names that came back. There's not. They're going to celebrate the 2025 season in July during the Burley statue unveil. They're going to celebrate the 125th season throughout. The promotions that they unveiled last night, the White Sox do the promotions maybe second to none. But there are some really cool giveaways this year, and they're reflecting. They're touching. They have a Ray Durham bobblehead. He's one of the most underrated players in the history of the White Sox.
Without question.
And so they're touching on some of the history to get people to the ballpark. I know the on-field product stinks, and they do too. Chris Getz knows. He's talked about the process. People don't want to hear about infrastructure, but at least he's got a plan of doing it the way he wants to do it. Whether it works or not, it's going to be years before we know.
So we got to talk to Getz and to Will as well, the manager of the team, the day before. And both of them, you know, both guys refused to or were smart enough not to talk about wins and losses.
Right.
They just wouldn't get into it. And I get it because even at their level and what they think they have and what they know has to grow – they can't predict wins. You can't. I mean, you have too many unknown players that haven't played in the major league level or some that have only played for a brief period of time. You don't know what kind of pros are going to be. You don't know how many are going to stay healthy.
Yeah.
You don't know the situations you're going to be in. But there is great hope that the talent is better. Sox fans are not going to become Cub fans. They're not going to become Detroit Tiger fans.
They're just going to become apathetic,
but a lot of them are. They are Missouri-like in saying, I'll sit at home, I'll listen to the radio, I'll watch TV, I'll go to the bar, I will watch them when I want to watch them, and I'm not going to go to the ballpark until you show me it's worthwhile, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's the way it is.
Yeah, and look, and it's an era of where there's a lot of other things to do. So I get it. We're going to talk to one of those young players, not a prospect, but a guy who was very impressive in his first major league season. Jonathan Cannon will join us at the bottom of the 10 o'clock hour. MLB Pipeline did update their prospect rankings. The Sox have six of the top 66. It's an impressive list. They've been there before. Now they got to develop them. Let's see what happens. We're going to talk about the Hall of Fame. The Hall of Fame announced their new candidates earlier this year as the voting came out. We're going to talk about the voting process. We're going to talk about Mark Burley's status. He is at 11.4% of the vote. He will remain on the ballot. We'll talk about all of it, whether you like it, whether you don't. Ichiro, one person did not vote for Ichiro. We'll talk about whether that should be public or not. On the other side of the break, on Inside the Clubhouse, he's Bruce Levine. I'm Ryan McGuffey at 670 The Score.
We're back with more Inside the Clubhouse on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com and always live on the free Odyssey app.
Ryan McGuffey and Bruce Levine back here on Inside the Clubhouse, and the Baseball Hall of Fame will have new members going in July, as this week we learned that CC Sabathia, Ichiro Suzuki, and Billy Wagner are going into the Hall of Fame. A great group, obviously Hall of Fame-type careers. Ichiro, we thought was going to be the next unanimous player, but came up a vote short. We'll get into Mark Burley, who had 11.4% of the vote. He will stay on the ballot for a sixth year. because you need 5%. He's been doing that consistently. The case for him is growing stronger and stronger. He needs to make up quite a bit of room to get to that 75%. But Bruce, we've been seeing for years now the Hall of Fame process and how the votes go public. People are tweeting out their ballots. You don't have to do that. It's always been prior to social media, it was always kind of anonymous voting style,
right?
Anonymous process. Ichiro, a lot was made this week about the one voter who did not vote for Ichiro for the Hall of Fame, and Ichiro had a funny comment at the Hall of Fame press conference saying, "There's one writer that I wasn't able to get a vote from. I would like to invite him over to my house, and we'll have a drink together, and we'll have a good chat." The only reason we know that is because of the publicity and all of the public votes that are out there. Now, what is your status on this process? Because some people want every vote out there publicly. Some people want it back to where it was before. Where do you stand?
Well, I stand where the Hall of Fame asked me to vote. Yep. Okay, you have to be a baseball in the BBWAA for 10 years to have status to vote for the Hall of Fame, be an active member of the media. I take it very seriously. I don't expose who I vote for. I don't feel the need to. I also don't hide the fact that who I vote for. If somebody asks me, you know, I'll say I voted for Ichiro. Why wouldn't you? I mean,
yeah.
But again, there's only been one player in history that got 100% of the vote. Okay, there wasn't much pushback when Hank Aaron, Willie Mays, Mickey Mantle, Babe Ruth, Ty Cobb all went into the Hall of Fame without a unanimous vote.
Yeah,
okay,
if those guys aren't going in unanimously, then come on.
Right.
You know, like, what's the point?
And as we talked about earlier, the one staggering vote was in 1954 when Joe DiMaggio received 44% of the vote. Take 75% of the voters saying yes, voting for you to get in. And Joe DiMaggio had to wait till a second vote the following year.
That's incredible.
To get into the Hall of Fame. Rabbit Moranville and Ted Lyons went in the year that he only got 44%. So,
flawed process. No process is perfect. But
right. But I mean, again, the demand for what you do and how you do it is a reality of social media now, okay?
Yeah.
And, you know, you either you get with it, or you have to respond to it. You can't ignore it. But until they tell me that I have to tell my vote, I don't see any reason to do it.
Yeah, no, it's fair. And the only reason if you do make it public is for basically public criticism. That's the way I look at it. So you're the guy who doesn't vote for Ichiro. It's out there. Everyone hammers you. If you have a ballot that everyone likes, no one says anything. So
not everyone's going to like your ballot because you can vote up to 10 guys on the ballot, right?
Yep.
This year I voted for 4 guys, right? That's who I believed were in. I see the list for next year. I don't see any of them that I feel are Hall of Famers.
So does that, what's quickly here with Mark Burley, does a case like next year on the ballot start to have the conversation where Mark Burley, I mean, the conversation's out there because he continues to stay on the ballot, you know?
So he
has a 60 WAR. He's a
five-time
All-Star.
Here's the dilemma.
Yep.
The evolving of statistics and reality of what a starting pitcher is expected to be now is different than it was even 5 or 7 years ago. It used to be you had to win well into the 200s. You had to have a lot of strikeouts. You had to be a world championship pitcher multiple times to be considered to get into the Hall of Fame.
Yep.
You know, guys like Jim Cott and Tommy John, who's still not in, had, you know, 270, 280 wins and didn't get in. Voters felt that they stayed around too long, that their numbers were beaten up because they stayed too long, that they weren't. Now, 200 wins for Burley, 12 years of 200 innings or more, looks a lot better and a lot closer to the Hall of Fame than it did 5 or 7 years ago. So therefore, his votes are going up. Andy Pettit's votes are starting to go up. There's a change in the perspective of what a Hall of Fame pitcher looks like.
Yeah, well, we have to go to a break, but I'll say this. If you want to do a deep dive, people, pull up CeCe Sabathia and Mark Burley. CeCe Sabathia has 3,000 strikeouts. That's the magic number, and 250 wins is kind of the new magic number. He's got both of those. But really do a look in a deep dive. And you mentioned it to Mark last night, Bruce. The numbers are, you have first ballot Hall of Famer and a guy trying to stay on the ballot. They're closer than people think. Different pitchers.
You know, I don't think Mark was in the Cy Young conversation as many times as Sabathia was.
Mark had finished in the top five of Cy Young votes one time. Well, speaking of a guy who would, maybe there's a guy 15, 20 years from now, Bruce, that we're talking about that could be a Hall of Famer. That's what Cub fans hope. Cade Horton is going to join us at the top of the hour on the other side of the break on Inside the Clubhouse. Bruce Levine, Ryan McGuffey with you until 11 o'clock. We will talk to Cade Horton next.